Okay. So how was that exercise?
Very good.
Difficult. How did you do that?
I don't know exactly how. What we found was that two of us found that it was very difficult to look at one of these attributes and calibrate it. And when you did that, you kind of lost the overall feeling for the totality of it.
Right.
And sometimes the totality told you more kind of unconsciously than consciously looking at how many lines it had on it.
Okay. So when you did take the whole totality of it, great. That's the strategy for actually doing it most effectively. And you need to break it down into your pieces so that you know the key things you're looking for. Which really, to a certain extent, what that does is it installs that into your unconscious mind, as this is how we do it. Then the most effective way is to take them all together. Because, and you probably, did you find in your group that your practitioner and observer got the result but by calibrating on something different? Yeah. Did you find that? Yeah. So, you might go like, well, I'm really good with eyes, so I'm just going to work with eyes. But with that particular client, it might not be the eyes that have it. It might be somewhere else. So taking the totality and taking the whole thing gives you the edge. So good learning. Yeah, that's definitely a way to do it easy. So other learnings, discoveries, questions? Yeah, Lindsay.
Almost intuitive, really. I you were saying about going with your first hunt. Mm-hmm. A couple of times, I made the choice, and then
right.
I went, oh, no, it's this. And I went with my first hunch, and that was right. But I didn't actually know why it was right. Okay. I just knew.
Okay. So
here's the most important thing, I think, about NLP. Did it work? That's the key thing. So quite often people come up to me after an exercise and like, I'm not sure if I got that exercise right. My question, if any of you ask me that, is like, did it work? And if you go like, oh yeah, it worked, I said, well, in that case you did it right. Because the most important thing is the result. So for some people, going for the, you need to take into account that like all of those things that we pointed out, your unconscious mind's aware of anyway. And it's using all of those things. And it probably has been, when you've met somebody for the first time and you're going like, not sure here, then that's how your unconscious mind was doing it. So we've done an NLP, is going like, okay, so how do you do that? Well, you do it like this. So we pull it apart and then put it back together again. So what you've now got is, yes, the most effective way is to do it like intuitively. Or what I would say from an NLP point of view, trust your unconscious mind to do it. And now you know how it works, you can do it consistently, rather than it being something that happens every now and again, you can go like, okay, I know how to do this now. And probably if you had to fall back on like, okay, so what was it that I actually saw, my guess is you'd be able to work it out. But for most instances, you don't need to know what specific thing it was that got you the result. The only time where you'd need to be able to do that is if you're going to be a coaching assistant or a trainer. in all of the instances, all that matters is, did I calibrate it correctly? Did I get the result I wanted? Yeah. Yeah.
And we found that when we were doing clients, it was quite difficult. When you thought of someone that you liked, your natural reaction is to smile. And so we were deliberately trying not to, and that was actually making it very hard for the observer to see difference, because we were trying very hard.
And did they still get it?
Sometimes, but it was really difficult.
Because you see the
natural reaction.
Yeah. So you might not even if you kind of like went like, I'm not going to smile, but I'm going to think about the person I like, you would indicate in other ways anyway. That's the thing. So yeah, I mean, obviously, if you were with the client and you went like, the practitioner went like, think of the person you like, and you went like. And now think of the person you dislike. Now pick one. Who am I thinking of? That
seemed like quite an obvious thing to calibrate, yet it was left out, and I wondered if that was deliberate.
Yes, because a smile is not sensory-based information. It's a judgment. It's a mind read. Yeah. So from a pure sensory-based, it would be kind of like, the lips were thinner and turned up at the end. Would be the way of describing that, yeah, rather than it being a smile, yeah, because it could be indigestion. Yeah, or somebody stifling a yawn, you know, when people do that, you know, oh, I'm going to yawn, I don't even know about it.
Once I was able to see the changes in Phil, then when we swapped over, I was really able to feel the changes in my own physiology. I could really feel my breathing change. And
good. Brilliant. Excellent stuff.
Just to take it another stage further, if you're speaking to someone, and this happens to me often, and you can tell they're not like what you say, what's a quick way of changing their state? Do you have any generalisations of something?
The appropriate way of quickly changing their state, or an appropriate way? Because there's lots of ways of changing people's state. You know. Snap out of it! We'll do it. But like, you know. I actually saw that in the cartoon. Brief therapy cartoon. And the therapist there, the client's there. The therapist goes like, what's the problem? And the client starts to break down. And the therapist goes like, straight across them, snap out of it! And by the third time, the client was going like, I'm okay. I'm sorted out. My problem's disappeared. NLP is called a pattern interrupt. But that's just a technical term. Okay. We'll be covering more things that you can do about that as we go through the next couple of days. Hold on to the thought. If you don't get the full answer for it, then come back to me with it. But I think you'll get that answer as we go through. Yeah. Yes.
I had real problems seeing it. On one person, I could see it very clearly.
Right.
And then when I was actually a practitioner, we both struggled with seeing it. And it was just, I got it wrong. I just continued to get it wrong. And I tried.
Did you get it wrong every time?
Did I? It was most.
You got wrong.
Yeah.
So if you get it wrong every time,
you see that's getting it wrong every time is as a bigger achievement as getting it right every time. You think about it, because you must have calibrated something, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get it wrong every time. So if you get it wrong every time, what you do is you go like, okay, what do I think it is? And then you just pick the opposite one.
Well, I didn't get it wrong every time.
Oh, damn.
and I just couldn't see a difference.
Okay. Probably what you need to do, I would say, is to be taking in a bigger, like broader perspective of the person rather than just focusing on specific things. Take the whole thing. And what you and some of the things may be like real slight changes. You know, some people you it's like, you know, it's written all over their face, you know, and they're easy to calibrate. Then there are other people who are like, you know, right, I'm not gonna show anything with my face whatsoever in this exercise. They're not gonna get this right for me. And there's still something that you can get. Still something that you can get. And it's probably gonna be one of the ones that they're least consciously aware of. That particular client can't hear, rather than their face. Yeah, that'd be the way to do it. So if you want to test it out again, but if the person heard, you see, they'd change it. So, so with those kind of things, people who are kind of like attempting to hide what's going on for them will take the things that they're most consciously aware would tend to give things away. And there's several things on there which people normally wouldn't be aware of. Here's the other thing you need to know. For these kind of exercises, this particular sensory acuity exercise and a number of other ones, it will be way easier to get the result out there than in here. Because in here, your client knows what you're doing. Yeah? So they can attempt, you know, for whatever reason, either consciously or unconsciously, to steer you off track. Out there, they don't know you're calibrating on the physiology. So they wouldn't even know the kind of things that might give it away for them. Yeah.
Obviously some people are more expressive than others just by nature and therefore they're easier to read. Is that related to the letter programs? Would an extrovert person just automatically be more expressive or kind of sort of a less expressive person than the introverted, or is there no relationship?
There might be a relationship. I would say it would go beyond just that one meta program.
But could you use it as a filter, though, or would that be
dangerous? I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't use expressiveness necessarily as a means of determining whether somebody was a introvert or extrovert. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily do that. Yeah. Yes.
One experience from that last exercise. When I was working with John. Always I just wasn't getting it. And I felt I was too close to it.
Right.
Because I was close, I was overlooking his eye, I was right. Over the chest. And
yes.
I came away and backed the chair off a little bit. The whole thing kind of...
Yeah. So get us some distance.
Also, is another thing you can do. Let's just actually do this as a quick process just before we go to tea. The other is to begin using your peripheral vision rather than your foveal vision. Okay. So let me just take you through an experience, so you can pick up, so you learn how to use your peripheral vision. So what I want you to do is find a spot you can look at comfortably. There's one there. We prepared in true Blue Peter fashion earlier in the training. Actually, it's been up there for the last year. They never take it down. People come in here for parties and go like, oh no, somebody put the black spot on my party. So just actually look at the black spot there and focus in on it, look at it. But notice that whilst you're looking at the black spot, you can see me moving around on the stage, even though you're looking at the spot. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to get our coaching assistants to come down the size of the room. Be careful of the microphones, to create some movement right out in your periphery. So continue looking at the spot. Then what I want you to do is put more and more and more of your attention in the peripheral part of your vision. Now the peripheral part of your vision is way more sensitive to movement than your foveal vision. So I'm going to ask our assistants now just to start moving their arms. And like, whilst you're looking at the spot, put your attention on the movement in the periphery of your vision, which for most of you will be right out at 180 degrees. And whilst you're doing this, it's okay to blink. Your eyes tend to work better that way. That's it. And then, in fact, what you can then do, if you like, is to then pull your attention all the way around behind you. Now, I'm not suggesting you'd be able to see behind you, but you can get a sense of what's happening behind you. And a technique that I found that some people find useful is, whilst they're looking at the spot, they imagine a tennis ball above and behind the back of their head. So look at the spot and put their attention on the imaginary tennis ball. It tends to pull their awareness around. It opens up. So you can look at the spot and actually be aware of the people on either side of you and the movement down the sides of the room. And then you can bring your eyes down to look at me, but keep your awareness in the periphery. So you can look at me on the stage, and yet still be aware of the movements down the side of the room. Using your vision in that way, okay guys, thanks. Using your vision in that way enables you to gather all the information, you know, take the whole thing in one go. The other thing is, that, of course, that your peripheral vision is more sensitive to movement. So a very, very small change is almost amplified with your peripheral vision, so it becomes more obvious. It also, we call that did you notice that your state changed when you did that?
Yeah.
How did your state change? What happened? Yeah. More relaxed. Yeah, anything else?
Calmer,
breathing deeper. Yeah. So in actual fact, what you're doing with the peripheral vision state is that you're actually going into quite a nice, what I call an uptime trance. Most people think of trance as being, you know, totally out. That's quite a nice, that can be actually quite a nice deep trance, but with all of your attention outside. So you are in trance, you're more relaxed, you're more calm, you're more balanced, you're more centered, which is a good state to be in when you're being a practitioner of NLP. We also call it the learning state, because it seems to open up the trapdoor between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, and enables you to soak up the information most easily. From teaching that technique to children, their grades improve by around about 1 to 2 grade points in a term from teaching them how to go into the learning state. So what they do is they go into the learning state when they're in class, then when they go into the exam, they go into the learning state again and look at the questions, and the answers come out from the unconscious mind, which is why we call it learning state. Very, very effective. 1 to 2 grade points just by teaching them that. So you know, that's going from like a C- to a C or C- to a C+. In just a term, just by doing that one technique, makes things very, very much easier for them. One is because obviously they're going into a trance, trance is actually a very, very good state for learning, since all learning is done by the unconscious mind. The other thing about learning and about memory is that all memory is state dependent. So when you experience something and you remember it, it's encoded in the state that you're in when you experienced it. So the best way to recover the memory is to go back into the same state you were in when you had the experience. Which is why, you know, when you think everything in your world's gone horribly wrong and like the world's unjust and like everything's terribly horrible, and people say to you like, well, think of all the good things that have happened into your life. You can't think of any. Because they're not coded in that feeling, that state. But like when you also like when you're feeling on top of the world and everything's going your way and you're really happy and like things are brilliant, all you can think of is all the other things that are going brilliant. Because they're the other memories that are coded in that state. So that particular state is a good one because it's a state that's easy to replicate. You know, go to an exam, find a spot on the wall that you can look at comfortably. Most school exam rooms provide that for you. It's called a clock. Just right on the end of the exam room, look at the clock, go into peripheral vision, and stay in peripheral vision, eyes down to the test paper, read the questions, and you'll find the answers just pop into your mind. Really, really useful state. Also a very, very useful state to be in when you're a practitioner, because it enables you to take the whole person in and calibrate most easily.